Theater of the Mind.
Well, it's August now, or as I prefer to think of it in the River City Humidity Factory of St. Louis, hell. While folks all over the Northern Hemisphere are battling the heat and stifling steam of summer, haunters tend to start feeling the impending reality of Halloween's approach. Less than 3 months, or in more realistic build terms for a lot of haunters, 11 weekends. In most years, this is when our special breed of insanity starts to kick into higher gear and plans need to be cemented into place. But this year is not like most. For many, it's unlike any other year we've experienced. Similar situations have occurred in North American history, but for anyone living today, this is unprecedented. Of course, I'm referring to the still ongoing pandemic and the subsequent lockdown, which, depending on where you live, may also still be ongoing. In some parts of the country, this is clearly because of the devastating number of casualties suffered. In others, it seems to be more influenced by a disproportionate brandishing of political power by local and state authorities. But whether it be due to politics or medical necessity, a lot of haunters are confronting the reality that anything they plan to do this year will have to be dramatically altered or cut back, if they're allowed to do anything at all. Outside of the large urban hot zones, much of America, and I assume Canada, are in a sort of hazy area floating somewhere between lockdown and free range. People are going about their daily lives much as normal, but with a few concessions, like mandatory face masks, physical distancing guidelines, and loss of bars and in-house dining. In such areas, home haunts may be permitted, but with restrictions. Walk-through haunts, especially those with indoor components, may very well be prohibited, and even if they're not, may be avoided by many for reasons of safety. In situations such as these, an obvious compromise would be a simple display. Lighting, set decor, and props, both animated and static, can always be set up for passersby to enjoy as they walk or drive past. This enables haunters to enjoy their favorite creative outlet and celebrate their favorite holiday while maintaining their status of coolest house on the block. But for the truly hardcore haunter, the display is the creative equivalent to kissing your sister, decaf coffee, or fat-free ranch dressing. What's the point? For these diehards, it's all about the interaction, the acting, the personal involvement. Fortunately, a haunt without the direct personal interaction of the walkthrough doesn't have to be the haunting equivalent of drinking O'Doul's. It simply requires an extra bit of planning and a slightly different approach. I've explained before how I came up with the title of my show segment. Theater of the Mind is an old phrase referring to the days of radio theater, in which a purely audio experience can have all the immersive entertainment value of actual live-action theater by stimulating the imaginations of the listeners. I thought that this was also a good analogy for the haunted attraction, since the audience members are getting thrills, fear, and excitement from obviously staged and fabricated scenes via their imaginations and willing suspension of disbelief. The key element as pertains to this year's unique haunt situation is theater. Anyone who is foregoing a full walk-through haunt for a more stripped-down attraction can keep the entertainment value high by taking a more theatrical approach. Basically, treat it less like the conventional idea of a haunt and more like a stage show or exposition. This allows the audience to keep their distance while still being able to see stories unfold and reveal themselves. This can be accomplished on many levels, ranging from simple live-action elements to fully choreographed and scripted programs. I basically see theatrical-style live-action in a haunt as being one of three distinct styles: basic atmospheric action, scene loops, and scripted shows. Basic atmospheric action is something you see a lot of in most haunts containing live actors. This is mostly what I've done for the past several years. Just be present and move about the haunt in a manner consistent with your character. For me, in my Grave Guardian / Grim Reaper persona, I simply lurked and loomed about the graveyard and through the haunt as a faceless, foreboding, shadowy presence. It added an atmospheric, sinister presence that didn't necessarily require any direct interaction with the hauntgoers. Another example could be a gravedigger or hunchback hauling a body somewhere, or the ever-popular zombie lurching aimlessly about. One haunt I remember from a video several years ago had a Nosferatu vampire periodically coming out onto the long balcony on the house's upper story, holding his hands over his ears, shaking his head, and trying to shoo the crowd away. It was funny and effective, this crotchety old vampire having his rest disturbed by all the noise and activity and basically telling everyone to get the hell off his lawn. These simple atmospheric actions add a lot to a display and keep it from just being an art installation that people look at for a minute or two and then move on. It keeps things moving and makes it more of a live show. Moving up a notch in complexity is what I think of as scene loops. These are essentially little micro skits, maybe a minute or two at most in length, consisting of a particular scene. It could be an attack scene, like a hiker with a flashlight nervously moving through the set, being stalked, run down, and attacked by a werewolf. A wizard or witch doctor could raise a zombie from the grave, which then follows him off the set. A zombie could approach the audience, but before it reaches them, Negan comes up from behind and clocks it over the head with his bat and then saunters off whistling. A witch could summon a small demon which climbs out of her cauldron and scampers off. You get the idea. Lighting, hidden entrances and exits, and various special effects can be set up and troubleshot ahead of time so that these actions can be repeated multiple times during show night. Ideally, several different loops can be rehearsed and performed every few minutes to avoid becoming obviously repetitive and give the audience several different little shows to watch. This really adds layers to the complexity and personality of the haunt and provides the audience with plenty of stories to relate the next day. The height of production in an exposition-style haunt is the scripted and choreographed show. These are perhaps best personified by many of the large home haunts in Southern California around LA and Hollywood. A lot of people in the film industry really love Halloween and use a lot of their professional know-how, contacts, and large budgets to give some truly elaborate shows. These may last for several minutes to half an hour, taking place at regularly scheduled showtimes, and can take the form of cabaret acts, burlesque shows, stage plays, and musicals. I find the YouTube videos of these shows entertaining, but to be honest, and this is just my opinion, the level of polish and professionalism in many of these give them the look of a Hollywood commercial production and just don't say home haunt to me. However, a couple of friends of mine from the Archon Masquerade do a show type home haunt every year. These are small and fairly simple productions, with shows only a few minutes long, but they come off looking really good because they're both quite talented. Both are established, award-winning costumers. The wife has been working the green room at the Con Masquerade for years and is in charge of emergency costume repairs, so she's quite the expert in putting things together fast. The husband was also a modeler for toy companies for a long time, including his own line of toys, so his sculpting and construction skills are quite impressive. They both have very fun and outgoing personalities and twisted senses of humor, so their little Halloween skits usually get a lot of laughs mixed in with the oohs and ahs. For anyone wanting to go the scripted show route, it helps to realistically assess ahead of time how big or elaborate a show you can pull off. Starting small and simple and beefing it up from season to season is probably the best approach, just as it is with any other type of haunt. Trying to go from zero to Hollywood the first time out is virtually guaranteeing disaster. If you live in an area where local authorities forbid trick-or-treating or any kind of haunted attraction, my heart goes out to you. The Woo Flu has pretty much kneecapped us all in every conceivable facet of our lives, and it's going to be a long road back to full normality. If you feel like just sitting it out and taking a break this season, that's certainly okay. This would be the year to do that. Hopefully, you can at least decorate with some kind of display. After all, I think we can all assume the crowds are going to be pretty diminished, so scaling back only makes sense. But if you're able to put on a haunt, albeit one with some limitations, there's no reason for it to be less entertaining. Punch up what you have with an extra dose of theatricality. Get in touch with your inner Ed Sullivan or Broadway director and put a little vaudevillian into your villains. Not only will this year's show benefit, it may inject a little new life into your haunting for years to come. After all, the show must go on. Break a leg, and in the true spirit of the theater, always remember to leave a ghost light burning. Epilogue. This was the most difficult part of the segment to write, but I felt it just needed to be said. When I got word of the loss of Robert Santos from our extended haunt family, the news hit me like a load of bricks. For several years, I helped out Rob and Stacy with their vendor setup at Transworld. When I was able, I'd help them set up and take down their display, and occasionally make local runs for copies or food or supplies. It was hectic and oftentimes stressful, but I looked forward to seeing them every year. When the pressure of the setup was over and the trade show was underway, Rob was always cheerful and happy to greet the friends he only got to see once a year. His twisted sense of humor and demeanor of friendliness and gratitude made him one of my favorite people to talk to at the show. Transworld just isn't going to be the same without him. The nature of his passing hit me in a very personal way. I don't have a family of my own, just a couple of older siblings. 2 years ago, I had two strokes, and I walked away from them with little more than a mild speech impediment and a slight degradation of my already crappy handwriting. Robert had one, and it took him, leaving a grieving family behind. It doesn't seem fair. You're never too old to rock and roll, but in a truly just universe, Rob was just too young to die. But justice and fairness are artificial man-made concepts that don't actually exist in the natural world. Life comes at you hard, often from unexpected directions, and leaves you with little more than the need to accept it, move forward, and carry on. My love and prayers go out to Stacy and the families. While I only saw Rob a handful of times, I consider it a privilege to have known him as a friend. Rest in peace, Rob. You will be missed. From the Theater of the Mind, I'm Revenant, and you're listening to Hauntcast.
I'm going now. Heaven help you.
Please like and follow the podcast. Stalk us on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Links in the description. And help us by sharing Hauntcast with all your haunted Halloween brethren. Until next time, stay scary.